The J-Talk Podcast. Yosh, 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 yosh.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. Ben Maxwell and Sam Robson with you. And Sam, they say if you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all. But we're a podcast, so we have no choice. Well, to put it nicely, that was one of the more bizarre match days we've ever seen in J1 over the weekend.
It was very weird. It was so dull. I mean, at least you could watch it at normal times in the afternoon and not get up at 4 or 5 in the morning to sit through that dross. But yeah, it's a very weird, a very un-J League weekend, I thought. And I guess that makes it interesting. But yeah, it was a tough watch for most of the weekend.
Yeah, most definitely. So with the ACL clubs away in Southeast Asia, there were 7 games played in J1 in match day 9, and a total of 7 goals scored in all of those games combined. In fact, on Monday night, as we're recording, Kawasaki have just wrapped up an 8-0 win over the Guangzhou youth team. So, yes, in the space of 71 minutes, Kawasaki managed to outscore all of the other J1 teams in their exertions on both a Saturday and Sunday. So, well, yes, we'll round it up, whatever it was that we witnessed on the weekend in J1 very shortly. But before that, I've mentioned the ACL. So why don't we chat about how Japanese teams have gone on so far, Sam? It began last Friday night for both Kawasaki and Urawa. And, contrasting results for them. But Frontale used another of their get-out-of-jail-free cards in the second half stoppage time against Ulsan.
Yeah, they did. And this game doesn't really help with the quality or excitement over the weekend. A poor affair. But, it was a 1-1 draw against Ulsan. In the end, it's a very good result for Kawasaki, especially when you look at that second-place qualifier. This is a point against the other big team in the group, so that definitely helps with that. But yeah, it wasn't a great performance from Kawasaki, as kind of we've come to expect, and they got fortunate in the end, where the Ulsan goalkeeper, who very rarely makes mistakes, and had a very good game up until that point, drops an absolute clanger to Kurumaya to get them an equaliser late on. But it was probably deserved in a poor game. Ulsan started the better at the better first half. They scored through Leonardo, but it was a goal that if VAR was in use in the group stage, and I'm not sure why it isn't, it would have been ruled out because it was one where it hits his hand and then leads to the goal. And then, yeah, Kawasaki was slightly better in the second half. So a dull affair, really, not a great game, but a decent enough point for both teams, and they'd probably accept it.
Yeah, fair enough. You mentioned Shintaro Kurumaya got the equaliser for Frontale in the 94th minute, and then he's piled on again tonight against Guangzhou with a brace. I knew I should have had that to sly 100 yen on him to be ACL Golden Boot winner at 1,000-1, Sam.
He's well on his way, isn't he? He's the Yuta Suzuki of the Asian Champions League. But it just kind of sums up Kawasaki, I suppose, because he was the only listed defender that started against Guangzhou today and ends up with a brace. So that kind of shows how the game was going. It's a non-contest, unfortunately, with these poor under-22 players coming over from Guangzhou. I don't know what the competition gains from having them in it. I don't know what we gain from being beaten by everyone. They already lost 5-0 to JDT in their first game. So, yeah, it was an absolute procession for what was the second string of Kawasaki.
Yeah, most definitely. So, also last Friday then, Sam, Reds won 4-1 against the Lion City Sailors, and the players on the score sheet for Reds, well, it was pretty much a dream team, and what a lot of Reds supporters would have had in mind as they were piecing together their attack in the off-season. Kasper Juncker, Ataru Esaka, David Moberg, and Yusuke Matsuo all on the score sheet. It doesn't get much better for Reds supporters.
No, and there were lots of glimpses, especially in the first half, about how these four can combine. Some of the movement was very good. They were relentless, especially in that opening, say, 30 minutes or so. Everyone got on the score sheet. Moberg got so excited, he decided to score immediately in his own net. And I think he's got a world record for quickest time between goals scored at one end and then at the other. It was quite extraordinary. But, yeah, it was a very good but first half performance. Second half, it was they tailed off a little bit, but they'd got the job done. And a good 4-1 victory. They play about an hour as we record against Shandong, which I think is pretty much a guaranteed 3 points. And they've been helped out royally by the Lion City Sailors, who have just secured a 3-0 victory against Daegu, which is a bit of a shocker. So that puts Reds firmly in control of their group.
All right, well, that's even more good news for Red supporters, yes, as we record on Monday night. The other J-League team that's been in action so far is Yokohama F. Marinos. They scored 3 goals, one into their own net from Takuya Kida. But more importantly, a Leo Ciara brace saw them to a 2-1 victory over the Vietnamese club Hoang. I could attempt to pronounce the entire team name, but yes, as most of you know, listeners are pronunciation dyslexic over here. I won't even bother. Hoang, I think, will suffice. But yeah, F. Marinos getting off to a good start. But I guess they probably would have liked it to be a little bit more comfortable, Sam.
Yeah, and it certainly wasn't comfortable. I thought I've gone H-A-G-L to avoid any sort of pronunciation issues. But I thought they played really well. They were so up for the game. They were so high in intensity in their pressing. They caused a lot of problems for Marinos. It was just they had no real cutting edge or quality, really, in the final third. But, yeah, I thought Marinos played really poorly and got away with one. But, I mean, all that matters is a 2-1 victory to start their campaign. And they'll need to improve because they've got John Book next, obviously the biggest game in that group for them. So, yeah, but get the poor performance out of the way and the 3 points. But, yeah, there are lots of work on, actually, from Marinos.
Yes, indeed. And, yeah, Jungbuk held to a 0-0 draw by Sydney FC in the group stage opener there. So, again, the Australian team potentially doing F. Marinos a favour. But, yes, that is the crunch game in the group, the second fixture coming up tomorrow night on Tuesday. Of course, we haven't mentioned Vissel Kobe yet because the artists formerly known as Shanghai SIPG withdrew from the competition, of course, leaving only 3 teams in Vissel's group. So they will kick off their group stage games against the Kitchi of Hong Kong tomorrow night, Tuesday. And, any whispers from the Vissel camp of how things are going, Sam? Apparently, Andres Iniesta has not travelled. So, obviously that'll be a loss for them and the way they want to play. But, yeah, we're obviously hoping that they can get the job done in their opener against the side from Hong Kong.
Yeah, that's an interesting point from a side definitely focusing on the ACL to not take the best player, but Lord, we won't go into that. They seem to be having a good time there. All the training photos, well, it's mainly them in some hot springs and hot tubs, and they're really enjoying life, I suppose. They're not losing games of football at the moment, so it's definitely better for them. It's not necessarily the easiest games on paper. Kitchi have caused problems in the past, Chiang Rai likewise. So it's going to be a very interesting game, this first one. We'll see. Well, what Lottina has managed to drill into his team over that time. I think they'll have enjoyed the kind of extra preparation period ahead of this game. But, yeah, very interested to see what they're doing and how will they respond to going bottom of the table at the weekend.
Oh, yes, indeed. Yes, we've got some good news for Shonan supporters to cover later on as they notch their first victory of the season. Yeah, leaving Vissel as the only winless club so far through 9 match days, of course, with Kobe having played 10 league games. So, wishing obviously all of the 4 J1 clubs taking part in the ACL all the best over the course of the next week. And I guess by the time we record our next episode, yeah, we'll know. We'll have some idea as to who's made it through to the knockout stages. All right, so let's move on to the weekend's action in J1 then. Just the 7 games, as we mentioned, and only 2 games were won over the course of the 7. And I think the match day maybe saved the best till last, Sam, at Hitachi Dai. Kashiwa hosted Kyoto, as we mentioned last week, are 2 of the more unfancied members of the top 7 in the table at kickoff. And now, well, they're both inside the top 5 after visiting Sanga claimed from the highlights, a thoroughly deserved 2-0 victory over Raysol. This was a bit of a quirky game, Sam, as neither manager was able to take his place in the dugout. Did I hear correctly? Did the Kashiwa manager, Nelsinho, do his Achilles?
Yeah, ruptured Achilles tendon. How old is he? He's in his 70s, isn't he? So that's some going. I don't know what he was doing on the training field. But thankfully he was at the ground. I think he was in one of the director's boxes, so he was okay enough to attend. But yeah, at his age, that's a horrible injury to get. So hopefully his recovery goes smoothly. But yeah, it's a very weird one to have neither manager available. The funny thing was, Cho has that virus. So he was conducting training via Zoom, and I saw one picture where everyone's gathered around on the training field, and for whatever reason he's got sponsors all behind him as if he's taking a press conference giving the training instructions. So I found that really quite funny, but it didn't seem to matter where Cho wasn't there. Kyoto just carried on. I thought they played incredibly well in this game.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. They took an early lead in just the 13th minute with a sweeping move that began deep in their own half and ended with Shinpei Fukuoka playing in Tenma Matsuda on the edge of the box. A slightly heavy touch from Matsuda as he cut back onto his right foot, but that allowed Takuya Ogiwara to arrive and basically take the ball off of Matsuda's bootstraps. His shot deflected and flew into Kim Sung-gyu's top corner, and yet Kyoto were away. 3 minutes into the second half, the Golden Boot leader Peter Utaka scored for the third straight game, pouncing on a loose ball and stabbing home from 6 yards after Kim parried Sota Kawasaki's shot. It appeared that Kawasaki went off with an injury in the second half, Sam, which is something that Kyoto could obviously do without, but with what is it, like 10 days in between league fixtures, hopefully he'll be able to make it for Kyoto's next league encounter. But we've obviously spoken about Reysol and how impressive they've been defying expectations in the early going. That's now two straight losses for them, but they still sit fourth, while Sanga are now four unbeaten and have won their last two on the spin as they rose to fifth. And as you say, played extremely well, and they're well and truly there on merit, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. And what impresses me so much about Kyoto is the way that they can play in so many different styles and how they can just adapt to whoever they're playing against. If they have to, they will sit back and soak up pressure and counterattack. But otherwise, they can be on the front foot. They can be high intensity pressing. And then they're able to play their way out as well. So the passing and the build up for that first goal is absolutely fantastic. The way that it's under a lot of pressure from Kashiwa in the way that they were pressing them. They were just so confident, so cool in possession, passing it out, 1-2 touch, never looked ruffled, and just built up and built up, and then in the end scored a very good goal. And just they were just so impressed me. Kashiwa, I thought, were slightly disappointing, because last week we said, oh, okay, maybe it's just a build-up of fixtures. They might have got tired against Kawasaki, where they really didn't offer too much. But in this game, especially after going behind, there wasn't a great response from Kashiwa. And whether this is just them kind of dropping back and middling out a little bit and dropping to where they should be, or it's just a small blip and they will bounce back, I'm not really sure. But it was a game where they really didn't cause Kyoto too many problems. And maybe that is just the way that Kyoto have set their defence up again. They've gone away from Appiah and Mendes, who started the season. I think the Asada in a new A partnership is a lot stronger and a lot more well-balanced. And Ogiwara has come in at left-back, and they just look a really settled unit there and have built on that very well. So, yeah, full credit to Kyoto. A slight worry for Kashiwa, but let's see. Maybe this break, as you say, will help them to kind of refocus.
Yeah, most definitely. And really looking forward to hearing from Nick Bolton in the weeks to come. He must be absolutely buzzing about Sanga being up in fifth, and as we've said, on merit, and doing it in some style with Peter Utaka absolutely flying, and looks like he with nobody else really giving him too much competition at the moment apart from Yuto Suzuki, Sam, it looks like Utaka might just about run away with the Golden Boot at this point. But of course, a long way to travel, but we basically passed the quarterway part of the season, haven't we? And Utaka up to 7 goals, and he's just taken back to life in J1 like a duck to water, and the ageless one just keeps on going. So we mentioned a little bit of a quirky situation in the Reysol Kyoto game with both managers having to, not being able, rather, to be on the touchline. We'll move on to Gunma Osaka hosting Shonan earlier on the Sunday. And, not quite as quirky, but in this game, neither team was, of course, able to call on their first-choice goalkeeper, with Masaaki Higashiguchi still sidelined, injured for Gunma, and Jun Ichimori continuing between the sticks for them. Well, of course, for Shonan, their number one, Kosei Tani, is on loan from Gunma, so was ineligible against his parent club, and that meant Daiki Tomi stepped in, as he does basically twice a season whenever Shonan face Gunma. And, this was finally some good news for Shonan and their supporters, Sam. They've obviously had a difficult start to the season. They had yet to win before Sunday. They'd obviously taken the lead away from home against a couple of pretty big fish in Kashima and Nagoya, but seen those leads turn into 2-1 defeats. But for them and their coach, of course, Satoshi Yamaguchi, a Gunma legend, it just so happened that Sunday was his birthday. And, a first league win of the season for Shonan came against the club where he, not quite made his name, but, where he spent the majority of his career.
Well, that's great. Happy birthday to him, and I'm glad everything worked out well for Shonan. They absolutely needed this result after the way that their season had gone. And, it wasn't a great game. It was absolutely dreadful in parts, but it worked out for Shonan in the end. I think towards the end of this game, for the start of this season, I think they've tried to move away from being the team that just launches the ball into the area to Wellington, and they try and build off that. But the problem is they don't have that much quality when they're trying to play it through nicely, and Machino and Ohashi are okay, but really they've not got a great deal of productivity out of them. And towards the end of this game, they just chucked Wellington on. They just then started launching balls into the box, and finally they got a reward for it. So I think they might just, I don't normally advocate this, but I think they might have to sacrifice playing nice football and just go back to basics of getting it wide, crossing the ball in and causing problems that way, because I think that's their best chance of getting goals in this. I thought they played fairly well second half. The first half, Gunma shaved it, but really both teams were confined to a few shots from the edge of the area. Neither team was particularly goalkeeper was particularly tested, and I'm sure if Gunma had the chance and they're offered, if they allowed the two lonely players to play and allowed Tani to play for Shonan but get Saito back into midfield for Gunma, I think that would have been a real positive for them, because they didn't really compete in that midfield area as much as they have been, and Shonan eventually got on top as the game went on. So yeah, really dull game, a really poor performance from Gunma, but vital 3 points for Shonan.
Yeah, actually, that's right. I'd forgotten that Mitsuki Saito was, on loan from Shonan. So, obviously, exactly the same situation as Tani. And, he will have left a hole in the middle of the park for Gunma. It did appear that, late on, that Shonan were the side, making the better headway. And, they did finally break through in the 90th minute when Hirokazu Ishihara crossed from the right and Shuto Yamamoto steered a tremendous header past Ichimori and into the net. A very courageous header from Yamamoto, but I doubt he'll remember much about it, as he clashed heads with Genta Miura and after receiving treatment had to leave the pitch for the remainder of stoppage time as Kazunari Ono came on as a concussion replacement. So, he's absolutely worn one, Yamamoto. But, hopefully when he came to, his teammates were showered him with praise, because that was a really courageous header under the challenge from Miura.
Yeah, an incredible header. And I mean, talk about taking one for the team. And he absolutely did that. I haven't heard anything really put on how he's doing afterwards. All it was that he's got a laceration above the eye, but whether he's got concussion or not, whether there's anything like that, I'm not sure at the moment. But yeah, hopefully he's okay and recovers fine from this. But yeah, what a goal, and what a really brave piece of play to get your team 3 points.
Indeed. Now, somebody had to lose to Shonan eventually, Sam. For Gunma and their supporters, this will be a very, very disappointing result. Obviously, the fact that they failed to score and really to test Tomi for the entire 90 minutes. They were missing Saito, but they're still missing Higashiguchi, but we obviously knew that coming in, and they have done all season. So any real warning signs blinking here for you from Gumba? Was this just a poor day at the office, or are there perhaps deeper problems here? Because that's the bottom team at kickoff, and Gumba will have seen that as a great opportunity to nudge their way up the table. But instead, they've handed Shonan their first victory of the season, basically.
Yeah, I think they're really struggling to get the balance. Katsuma Saka has changed its formation a lot all season. And defensively, in the last season a bit, they've not been very good. And he's tried to shore that up. This was the first game that he went back to the back three and had Kwon come in alongside Shoji and Miura. And generally, they dealt with most things pretty well. But then it takes away from the attack, which is already lacking Usami. He had no Kurata in this game as well. And Yamami, you can't just rely on a 22-year-old just to be the spark and to create things. Because, yeah, he didn't have a great game in this one. Patrick, bless him. I mean, yeah, he does what he does fairly well, but I don't think he's going to score you too many goals, and he's not the greatest necessarily in the way that they build up. So, and Fukuta tried his hands out here. Ishige really hasn't done a lot, and Wellington Silva, I don't really know what's going on with him. And they're struggling really creatively in that front three. And yeah, when you've got a stubborn team like Shonan were, it's very difficult to break them down without that bit of quality and ingenuity. And they're really lacking that at the moment. And I think it might be in the summer, he might have to refresh that, maybe, yeah, move a few players on if Wellington Silva's not part of his plans, get him out of there, and then try and get some quality in those forward areas, because at the moment they're really lacking in that. And because they're trying to focus on getting a more solid defence, they're losing numbers as well up front. So it's a really difficult situation that Katsuma Saka really has to work out.
Yeah, most definitely. So before we leave this game then, and we won't get too carried away about the first victory of the season for Shonan, but, kudos to them. And as I said, I think they finished this game the better team. And if either team deserved to win it over the course of, well, especially the second half, then it was probably them. So fair dues. And they look ahead then to what is always a busy time around Golden Week. And they, they won't be licking their lips, but they'll be, maybe beginning to feel quietly confident about how they might get on over the course of Golden Week when they travel to Sapporo, host Shimizu, and then visit Fukuoka. I mean, all of those teams are amongst the bottom seven. And, all three of them have just won one game so far this season from their nine plates. So I don't think any of those three teams will hold any fears for Shonan. And if they can, get a little bit of momentum, which, as we know, is such an important part of the J-League. Once a team gets on some sort of a roll, then, they can be hard to stop. Hopefully for Shonan, this is the start of a decent spell here.
Yeah, hopefully, because, well, obviously I have no biases towards any team, but it's nice to have a competitor league, and you don't want a team just get cut away and have no real chance. So yeah, it'd be good if Shonan can pick up a few points from these games. They'll definitely look at them. I mean, Sapporo they've struggled, haven't they? They've scored, they've won once, but generally they're drawing. It's probably going to be a draw at the Sapporo Dome for Shonan, so they'll take that. Shimizu, who I think are better than the results so far, but they're definitely very open, and they'll give the Shonan chances. And I think, yeah, they'll definitely see that at home as a decent opportunity. And then Avispa, you're always in the game against Avispa because they can't score goals. So those three games are vital for Shonan. If they can come away with, let's say, 5 or 6 points from that, I think that would be a decent haul. It'll keep them very much in contention to be outside the relegation places. And yeah, once you get a bit of momentum in this league, as you say, you can go on and then, who knows, you can beat anyone on any given day in this league. So, let's hope for some positive results for Shonan. Because, especially in that second half, they did show a few signs that there was a little bit about them.
Yes, indeed. All right, then. So, in terms of goals, we've only got one game left that had any in it at all. And that was at the Yamaha Stadium, where Iwata and Hiroshima met. And I don't know, these two teams are a little bit greedy, Sam. Four goals between them. Four goals between them, but the other four games we've got left to cover, there was none at all. So, Makoto Mitsuta, who we've mentioned so many times over the course of this young season, fired over with a couple of early chances for the visitors in the early exchanges. But 6 minutes before the break, Iwata went in front when a loose ball rolled across the top of the Hiroshima box. And that man, Yuto Suzuki, everyone's a fantasy idol at the moment, held off his man and dug out a shot that flashed into the top corner via the fingertips of Hiroshima keeper Keisuke Osako. Shortly after, the visitors had a couple of chances to equalize, but Junior Santos belted a pair of shots straight at Iwata's reserve keeper, Alexei Kosolev, who had come on for Ryuki Miura in the 22nd minute. Sanfrecce did not have to wait too long to get back on level terms, though, as 19 seconds into the second half, Taishi Matsumoto fired in a low cross, and Iwata defender Ricardo Grassa poked the ball under Kosolev for an own goal. And then just past the hour, they took the lead when the hugely impressive Mitsuta couldn't miss from 6 yards after Yoshifumi Kashiwa and Tsukasa Morishima combined down the left. So at that point of the game, Sam, Hiroshima had turned it around, and our man Mitsuta had given them the lead. It looked for all money that they were going to go on and win it, but a bit of a sting in the tail, unfortunately, for Hiroshima. But again, in similar terms to Shonan, we want to see some of the teams down the bottom doing okay, and Iwata managed to dig themselves out a point at the end.
Yeah, and it's not the first time this season that they've managed to keep going towards the end and grab themselves something. A whisper at the start of the season, I think there's been other occasions as well. But yeah, so like the second, it looked like the game was getting away from Jubilee. Once Hiroshima went 2-1 up, they were still the team that were creating chances. And I mean, they got rid of Nagai for this game and brought in Junior Santos, but the problem was exactly the same. He just had quite a few chances, generally hit it straight at the goalkeeper or missed the target. So if they were a clinical striker away from like a very comprehensive victory in this game, Hiroshima. But you've got to give a lot of credit to Jubilo. Suzuki takes his chances. I mean, it's a very good strike from the edge of the area. And then Lasso, as he's got on the back of his shirt, Gonzalez made up for his punch against Shimizu a few weeks ago. And yeah, and grabs a goal here. It's dreadful defending, I have to be honest. Yoshinaga's cross comes in and Araki completely misses it with an air shot. Then he tries to recover and just slips over. I don't know what was layered on the grass beneath him there. They'd set out a few Mario Kart bananas for him to slip on or something. But it was really dreadful defending, but Gonzalez took a couple of bites of the cherry, but eventually puts it in. And yeah, credit to Jubilo for digging in and keeping going. But on the balance of play, I think that's very much a point stolen at the death.
Well, yeah, I mean, I didn't want to be too harsh on Junior Santos, but I think I ran out of fingers to count how many chances he had. And as you say, they were pretty much all straight at Kosolev. The chance when he was through with the 12 minutes to go should have iced the game for Sanfrecce, but instead they've seen their three-game winning streak ended, though still take a point back to Hiroshima with them. And Fabian Gonzalez, the redemption tour, I guess it begins with the equaliser here after, as you say, good work down the right from Yoshinaga to firstly nutmeg Mitsuta and then, get his cross in. But it was a bit of a horror show from the Hiroshima defence from that point on. But for Iwata, any point is golden for them these days. And with their prefectural rivals, Shimizu, also drawing, as we'll get to soon. It still keeps them above it keeps them above Shimizu, at least on goal difference after 9 games. So, that's all the goals then from match day 9 wrapped up. We've got 4 nil-nils left to cover. First, we'll go to Kashima, where Antlers hosted Nagoya. Reminiscing to be done here. Leo Silva returned to Kashima to face his former teammates after his winter transfer, while former Antlers striker Mu Kanazaki also started for Nagoya. And they're very happy to have both of those players. They were, I'm sure, overjoyed to see club captain Yuichi Maruyama back in central defence for his first league start in 11 months. And, well, perhaps not so coincidentally, Grampus returned to their clean sheet ways in this game. It was interesting to me, Sam, to see from the highlights that Yuma Suzuki wore the armband for Kashima, at least until Sean Madoy came on for the last 25 minutes. And then Doy took it. So I wasn't aware there'd been a change in the captaincy at Antlers. I just assumed it was Kento Misao again. But, yeah, it looks like they've shaken things up a bit, or Rene Weiler has changed things around. So I'm not sure if Doy is the official club captain or not. But I was, overjoyed to see my boyfriend take the armband for Kashima. Quite an honour for him. I'm not sure if it was a once-off or whether you've noticed them him wearing it earlier on in the season, but that's about the only interesting thing I've got to say, I think, about this game.
Well, yeah, they're pretty much, and can you say a better role model than Yuma Suzuki? Absolutely vital, captain material, that's what everyone would say yeah. about him. So, yeah, but it was, not great. And I suppose tactically it was slightly interesting when Maruyama came in and they went to a back three, and obviously they shut down Ueda and Suzuki up front. They really had nothing, but then at the same time it sacrificed Mateus, who played as part of a front two, and his main quality is crossing, so if you're going to play him centrally, I think that takes away a large part of him, and it's not like he can just drift out if he's playing with Kanazaki, because Kanazaki will never stay in the centre either. He's always one that drifts out, so they didn't really get anything going in attack either. I mean, the only sort of talking points I have from this game is I think Leo Silva was quite lucky not to be sent off. He raises his hand, I think it's at Izumi, and pushes him in the face. And usually a raised hand to the face is a red card. I think VAR did have a look at it, but decided against it. And then IS Ueda was a little bit late for the Winter Olympics, but he was trying some figure skating, pirouetting, trying to get a penalty from a corner. And then on review, that wasn't given either. But yeah, other than that, yeah, this was a game that happened.
Yeah, yes, there was almost a dramatic finale when the Antlers substitute Yuta Matsumura's 20-yard shot was well saved by Mitch Langerak leaping to his left in the last minute of second half stoppage time. But yeah, apart from that, 90 minutes of something happened, and then both teams shook on a point. All right, well, similarly up in Sapporo on Saturday afternoon, and I have to apologize, Sam, you had to get out of bed at ridiculous o'clock over in the UK. Usually Sapporo don't let you down. I don't know whether it was just because it was FC Tokyo who came calling, but along similar lines to the Kashima Nagoya game, pretty much nothing happened at all over the course of the 90 minutes of this game, apart from a ridiculous double save from Jakub Slovic with about 12 minutes to go. Firstly, to keep out Taika Nakashima's bullet header from a corner, and then with the rebound sitting up perfectly for him, Takuma Arano blasted on target, but Slovic was still down and managed to just about keep the ball out. Now, actually, on the DAZN telecast, Sam, we didn't see a replay of that until the full-time whistle had actually gone. So I was worried that they didn't want to embarrass the officiating crew and that Tokyo had actually got away with one that had crossed the line. But I think when they finally got around to showing the replay, we could see that it hadn't Arano's shot hadn't crossed the line, and Slovic had somehow managed to keep it out. But apart from that, and for Tokyo, a very late chance from for Diego Oliveira, who headed just wide in the 87th minute, and then Adailton blasted across the face of goal in the first minute of stoppage time that Kuryu Matsuki was unable to connect with as he slid in. That was about it. So I guess it perked up a little bit in the last 15 minutes, but just a game of football happened.
Yeah, just about. And thank goodness for that double save, because I don't think they'd have managed to put any highlights together on the J-League International YouTube channel. I think they just about crept over 2 minutes for this game, which says it all. And that 30 seconds was the teams coming out for the start of the game. So, I was disappointed looking at that when the teams were announced. They didn't go with Nakashima up front, because I thought, we've said the last few weeks, he's always caused problems when he's come off the bench. And obviously with Kuroki injured, and they've been playing Gabriel Xavier up there, which hasn't really worked, and I've not really ever seen anything from Tuchic that suggests that he's likely to score many goals. And yeah, Nakashima, when he came on, obviously involved for that big chance there. But he just looks like he carries a lot more threat than their other options. So yeah, a little disappointed he wasn't playing. The rest of the game, yeah, it was one of those things. But yeah, thank goodness for Slovic. It was a tremendous double save. You won't see many better, although Arana probably should score. But just take nothing away from the goalkeeping. But yeah, another draw for Sapporo. Is that their fourth home draw? And is that, well, it's seven overall or something? It's just pretty ridiculous. But yeah, another game that didn't quite live up to the bill. And that's probably the first really that Sapporo, that I can remember, have let me down in one of their early kickoffs.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just glad that VAR didn't get too bored and decide to have a proper look at Masato Morishige's sliding tackle on Arano on the half hour, because, yeah, perhaps on another day they might have considered upgrading that yellow card to a red. But, yeah, Morishige, I think, got away with one. And, yeah, as you say, Sapporo's chase for a first home win of the season rolls on. But, of course, as we mentioned earlier, they host Shonan in the next round of fixtures. So perhaps that's the golden opportunity that Sapporo have been waiting for. We shall wait and see. Okay, now we'll head down to Fukuoka next to their home clash against Cerezo Osaka. You guessed it, listeners. It also ended 0-0. But before we get on to the events at the Best Denki Stadium, Sam, there's obviously been some interesting, some odd, whichever way you want to slice it, some news around Takashi Inui, his absence from the last couple of league fixtures. And indeed, it will be an extended one, with the club announcing that after having already missed a couple of games, he was to be suspended for a further six going forward.
Yeah, I briefly mentioned it last week, but kind of jokingly, because I thought, okay, it was just the one game that has been told off, or a little slap on the wrist, and that would be the end of it. But no, it came out after he'd missed the second game that he missed against Kashima in the Levain Cup, that he's going to be banned for a further six games for basically like poor discipline and not unprofessionalism. Like, he was subbed off against Kashima in the league a couple of Tuesdays ago, and wasn't happy. They were 1-0 down. He wasn't delighted about coming off. Obviously thought he could have added something, and he didn't shake the manager's hand. He just kind of walks past him. But there's nothing massively untoward there. It's not like he's throwing bottles around. It's not like he's come off and he started swearing at people. It didn't look massive. But yeah, to give an extra six-game ban, so in theory it's like an eight-game ban in total, he must have done something in the dressing room that is just very unprofessional. I don't know what, if he's trashed the place up, if he's written Kojiku's not a very nice person on the mirror or something like that. I don't know what he's done. But yeah, it seems on the face of it a very harsh punishment, and it's definitely one where you're cutting your nose off to spite your face, just because obviously one of their best players, if not their best player, Inui. But yeah, I guess as Johnny Nicol came in on Twitter and added logic and reason, which isn't fair really on Twitter, it's not where the place for that. But yeah, maybe he's just not being a role model, not showing the best for the younger players there, which he should be. And they've really made an example of him. So it's a really interesting situation. It's hard to say whether the punishment is justified or not, given we don't know exactly what happened. But when you consider Kashima suspended Pituka for two games, was that what they gave? The league gave four extra. But for booting that bottle into the stand and almost hitting a supporter, this, just on the face of it, does seem very excessive. Have you seen anything similar in the J-League before? And what are your thoughts on the punishment?
Yeah, again, it does seem very very harsh, very extreme. That's an excellent point from Johnny, that, yeah, the club want to be seen to be doing the right thing, and they want their players to set an example, especially the experienced ones. I think last week we were quite positive about the direction that Cerezo appeared to be heading in, and then this is just unwanted and an unnecessary distraction that he should have handled himself better in the first place. But it does seem really excessive. And I can't recall anything like this for purely disciplinary reasons, without, as you say, you're kicking a bottle or assaulting anybody. So, goodness knows, it would love to have been a fly on the wall in that dressing room. But I guess all that sort of stuff will never come to light, and Inui will have to serve his time. And then I guess it's up to him as to whether he's repentant or not, or whether this could be the catalyst for him perhaps wanting to leave the club again. I don't know. That's perhaps a bit of an extreme bow to draw, but we'll wait and see. And as I say, a distraction that Cerezo could have done without, and they could have done with some goals away at Fukuoka, Sam, but it wasn't really happening for them, was it? I wonder whether a little bit of a malaise came across the squad as a result of this unwanted attention, and the Inui situation maybe did it hang over them. Well, I'm not sure. Their performance wasn't great, though, was it, at the best Denki, as Fukuoka had the majority of the chances. But I guess with Lukian and Wanma up front, Cerezo's goal wasn't in too much danger, and they almost nicked it in the 89th minute when Sota Kitano had a good-headed chance from Riku Matsuda's cross, and then Bruno Mendes headed straight at Masaaki Murakami in the 8th of 10 stoppage time minutes, as it appeared Cerezo finished slightly the stronger here.
Towards the end. I thought, generally speaking, Avispa was slightly the better team. I mean, neither defence was tested a great deal, and Avispa generally, defensively, you can always rely on them. They've got three very good centre-backs, and whoever they choose, be it Nara, Grolli, or Mia, I think it was Nara and Mia in this game, they generally deal with what they come up against, especially as without Inui, and Kiyotaki only managed the last half an hour or so. They were lacking a little bit of creativity besides Nakahara. But going forward, Avispa, they generally had a decent possession, they did decent territory, but yeah, Lukian and Wanma just weren't going to score. They didn't look likely. I mean, Lukian probably came as close as he's come in a few weeks when they dragged one just wide. But yeah, they've tried a little bit of everything at Avispa up front, and none of it is working. I think they've tried, now that they've tried the two big men up top, I think they've tried every combination available to them, and nothing has really worked. So yeah, I think it is just a lack of quality up there. And I just reiterate, I think John Mary should have stayed. I think he had that little bit of X factor to him, a little bit of quality, and a little bit something different compared to what they have here. But yeah, maybe it's just they've got to get through to the summer and grab it a different option, because yeah, what they have at the moment really isn't working.
No, definitely not. I mean, yeah, you're right. You can't fault either Lukian or Wanma for effort, but yeah, it just wasn't happening for them again on Sunday. Shun Nakamura was unlucky to see his shot from Wanma's layoff graze the post on its way out of play in the 72nd minute. But that was probably the best of Fukuoka's chances, as they've now gone four straight league games without a goal. In fact, they've failed to score in seven of their nine league games so far. And so far this season, the bluntest attack in J1, but also the joint second best defence has them on 8 points from nine played, with a win and five draws so far this season. All right, so I guess we'll wait and see how things shake out at Cerezo over the course of the rest of Takashi Inui's suspension, and as we said, we'll see what happens once that is up, and how much Akio Kogiku wants to get Inui involved again in the coming months. All right, so the final game was down at the real estate agent in front of the Station Stadium in Tosu, where Sagan hosted Shimizu. Another 0-0, Sam, on Sunday. It looked to me from the highlights that Shimizu had the better chances throughout this game. Yuito Suzuki had a good chance early on that he volleyed straight at Park Il-gyu, and he'll still be pulling his hair out about that chance 6 minutes into the second half, when Park went walkabout just for a change, and passed the ball straight to Suzuki, who was attempted chip into an empty net from 25 yards went all wrong. For Tosu, I guess there were opportunities for a golden boot outsider Yuki Kakita, but it wasn't his day either with his head or his right boot. So I don't know, 0-0, just about fair enough?
Just about. I do think Shimizu slightly edged it, but didn't have enough quality to take advantage of those chances. They came close right at the end, towards the end as well, with Santana came on, turned Tashiro inside and out, and then dragged the shot inches wide of the post. That was probably the closest any team came. But yeah, that Suzuki chance is a big one, because Park is, as usual, in no man's land. And he had a bit more time than he thought, and he's just kind of rushed it, and yeah, he's got it all wrong. But yeah, Alita, thank you for Park for trying to make it interesting, I suppose. But yeah, it was another game where just a lack of quality in forward areas really harmed them. And yeah, 0-0, probably just about fair. And it was just, I didn't just get this round over with. Yeah, it was a difficult one, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Yes, it most definitely. All right. So, you did mention on Twitter, what's the record for the shortest podcast? I think we're probably setting our new record for this season, at least on this episode with, as we said, a grand total of 7 goals from 7 league games. So that's a match day 9 rounded up then. So obviously we've got the ACL group stage are still ongoing throughout to Southeast Asia. And then on Wednesday of this week, FC Tokyo will host Nagoya in their league fixture that was originally postponed back in match day 2 after the COVID-19 situation at the Capital Club. Then over the weekend, we have a full round of Levain Cup fixtures, which I'm sure you can't wait for, Sam. And basically, I'm looking forward to having the weekend off. Then, match day 10 comes up starting on Thursday, the 28th of April, as the Golden Week period of holidays in Japan gets going. So, yeah, Thursday night, Iwata host Nagoya, and then the other 6 games all take place on the Friday, which include Cerezo Osaka hosting Kashima and FC Tokyo entertaining Gamba Osaka in the Capital Club's first league fixture to be played at the new National Stadium. So that's a big occasion for all the Tokyo supporters and Gamba the visitors. So that's what we've got to look forward to in the coming days, Sam. So Levain Cup for you on the weekend.
How exciting. I can't wait to get up early for that. Maybe teams will play slightly stronger teams now, I suppose, with the week break. And it's getting towards the crunch time where teams will start to focus and think, OK, do I want to get through this group? And maybe we'll be in for a few more interesting games. But, yeah, it's not necessarily my favourite weekend of the season.
All right, then. So that is it for this week's episode of the J-Talk podcast. Let's put these Match Day 9 fixtures behind us and look forward. Hey, listeners. Before we finish, we'd obviously like to thank all of our patrons for their ongoing support on Patreon, in particular Tom and Victor, who have come on board over the course of the last week. Thank you very much, guys, for your support. We'd also like to thank you, listeners, for listening wherever you are. With no J1 this weekend, we'll speak to you again soon. Bye for now.
The J Talk Podcast. Yes, 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 yes.